This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, and with me, Cam Ruslan, today we have BFM's very own Sharmila Ganesan. Great to have you back.
Thank you for having me.
And we have the return of, after his historical tour.
Thank you.
Comedian and the man who will be playing Jolo in the movie.
Hopefully. No word on that whatsoever.
Jason Leong.
Thank you. Thanks for having me again.
Have you just finished tour? You haven't, you?
Well, I finished the tour with the MECC, Douglas Lim, Kwa Jian Han, and Pun Chi Ho, last month. So, yeah, it's the third tour I had in a year. So, it's nice to have a bit of a break and come back to BFM and talk to you guys.
Okay, great. And so, our three topics this week are topic number one is The Show Must Go On. Topic number two is Traveling DIY.
Yeah.
And finally, topic number three will be same role, different actor.
Right.
And so before we start, I just want to take a moment to say that at BFM, there's an elephant in the room. Mm-hmm. And something happened earlier this week. Allegations of sexual harassment. Mm-hmm. Inside BFM. And it's I just want to say that here at a bit of culture, you know, we're aware of this. And but we actually pre-record this show. Folks, so you're not listening to it live unless you're listening in a podcast, and blinding them with science there. So events are happening all the time, and you know, I can't speak for the 73 people who work here at BFM, but I myself am shaken by the situation. Mm-hmm. But we will address this topic one day. Mm-hmm. But for moment, you know, at the moment things are moving fast, so I hope you understand if we don't talk about it this week.
Okay.
Because I've been working in media and entertainment my entire working life.
Yeah.
And I've always lived by the adage, the show must go on. And a couple of examples I can think of, which are quite extreme examples. There's the singer, the American rock singer, Patti Smith. Mm-hmm. Back in the 70s, she was doing a concert, singing her guts out, and then she fell off the stage.
Oh, dear.
And she actually broke a vertebra. All right, so Dr. Jason Dongman, how painful that would be.
Yeah.
It was her neck. She actually literally broke her neck.
Oh, yo.
And she went back on stage and finished the concert.
Wow.
Because the show must go on.
Right.
And there's this clip going around at the moment of Katy Perry.
Mm-hmm.
And she's backstage, and apparently she'd just been told that her husband is leaving her.
Mm.
And
what?
She's
this
sobbing.
A video clip of this?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
she's
dear.
Sobbing. The camera work is such that it's not in your face. It's not reality TV. It's very fly on the wall. It's just...
Yeah. It's a viral recording of some sort. Yeah. Someone's with a camera phone. Okay.
Yeah. And she's sobbing. And you can hear that the crowd's getting ready. She's about to go on stage.
Oh,
just before she's going on stage, she is absolutely sobbing privately. And then there's this shot of her. She's about to literally go on. And in a split second before she goes on, she puts on her game face. And she goes on stage.
Mm. I have to watch this video.
Yeah.
It sounds because, so amazing.
It is, because the show must go on.
The cameraman's an...
No. To be fair, it is filmed clearly by... It's professional camera work. It is filmed.
Oh, it's professional camera work.
Yeah, and it is edited, etc. But, I do believe, nonetheless, the reality of the situation.
Mm.
So I'm just thinking, you know, these are pros. And I take my hat off to them and I think, wow, well done. The show must go on. But at the same time, I'm thinking, sometimes maybe the show shouldn't go on. So, Jason, I mean, you're a stand-up. You're a comedian.
Right,
You
yes.
have to go on and be funny.
Yes.
There must be nights when you're thinking, I just can't do this.
Yeah, well, no. Well, thankfully, I've never had such personal traumas like, you know, a husband or wife announcing that he or she is leaving. But there are some nights when I go like, you know, I really don't want to do this. You know, let's say for a corporate gig, you know, and the crowd's rowdy and you're not up to it. Your heart's not into it. But the show must go on. And I've never cancelled a show before. You know, I still went through it. And sometimes you'd be surprised that when a comedian or a performer has like a preconceived notion of what the audience would be like or how the show is going to turn out. But sometimes when you go on stage, the crowd or the audience will surprise you and you'll be thankful. Oh, I'm very thankful that I came here tonight despite all the negative elements, you know.
Mm.
And that phrase, the show must go on, I think if I look at it macroscopically and more realistically, the show will go on, whether or not the performer goes on stage. Because some other performances will be going on, you know, the life will go on.
Shamila, are you?
I mean, I think what we do here at BFM, right? One of the things that I quickly realized once I joined radio is that people can hear in your voice what you feel. And so you have to be very sort of aware. And there have been days ever since I've joined here where I've come on and something has happened in my personal life. And then I have to go on air and talk. And my show is the art show. Generally, I'm talking to people and you know, about creative things and arty things. Mm-hmm. And you can't quite do it sounding like this because I've had a bad day, you know? Right. So there is a certain extent. I think that's something that a lot of people who work in the arts and entertainment and the media, we almost internalize it, and it's just how you function, because you can't allow, even if you're a print journalist, you can't allow what's going on in your personal life to affect the way you conduct an interview or to bleed into. You're not afforded the kind of maybe privacy that some other jobs are, where you can sit at your desk for a couple of days, not really have to talk to anyone except send out emails. That's not a luxury.
Describe my life. and you make it sound so hollow.
I do. I envy you a little bit sometimes.
Yeah, but and to go on a tangent, like my former job where I was a doctor, you know, and I can tell you, like, doctors all around the world, they all have personal issues all the time because their job is so stressful and it drains them a lot. But even then, they have to put on a smile on their face and go and save lives.
Actually,
you know?
That's something you never think about, right? Because you go see a doctor and you're telling them all of these problems, some of which can be very serious.
Yeah.
And there's very little awareness of what that person might actually be going through.
I mean, that's what I want to ask as well before we wrap up is, yes, the show must go on, but what is the toll? Let's say Katy Perry, say. Mm-hmm. Well, no, let's say Patti Smith. You know, she could do serious damage to herself, like long-term, lifelong damage, by doing that wonderful act.
Right.
And, you know, for doctors whose jobs are far more important than singers, I mean, what's the long-term toll of putting on a game face and just...
I think that there is the stress will take its toll on you, and that's why, like, it's very important to take leave and go and enjoy yourself once in a while. Travel, you know what I mean? Once in a while. Two quick examples, though, like of like this kind of personal stuff. Like, I know a pediatrician many pediatricians who have to go on call because other people's children are sick. But their own kids are sick at home, and they have to leave their kid and their sick kid to go and take care of other people's kids, you know. And another example is how, like Shamila mentioned, like, people don't understand the toll it takes on doctors, right? While the show is ongoing or whatever in the clinic, like, a doctor will be coughing, let's say, or sneezing, or like, oh, sorry, I'm feeling a bit feverish today, and then most patients go, oh, doctor pun boleh sakit. Doctors are human too.
You've just blown my mind. I never thought of that. Right. It just never crossed my mind. Yeah.
You never imagine a sick doctor, but doctors do get sick as well.
But I would steer clear of a sick doctor.
Yeah. But I think to answer the question you asked early on, like, when should the show not go on? I think, I mean, if it's going to have lasting damage where you can't perform again, then by all means, no, don't perform. And a lot of fans would understand. Like, one of my favorite performers is Darren Brown. He's a mentalist in the UK. His shows on stage requires a lot of talking. It's like a 2-hour he's talking nonstop, so he has to preserve his voice. There are some nights where he has to cancel because the voice is just not there, and to go on would damage the rest of the tour. Right. So he has mentioned his blog post, sorry guys, I'm not coming. And no one took offense, just get a refund and fine.
Well, I would also, maybe as a counterpoint to that, I completely acknowledge that's true, but I think in many cases the show can help you go on too.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
nice.
Because there have been many times when things have been difficult, and the fact that the structure of work, the fact that you have to come in and you have to put on a game face, can actually help you deal with the other stuff that you can't quite control.
You know what? That is so true. Yeah. That is so true.
Well,
knowing that there's few hundreds of people depending on you, that gives you like a boost, like an emotional.
And it also reminds you that you're more than this problem, right?
Oh, that's so good. Yeah.
Well,
I want to talk to you whenever I sit down.
Yeah. My door's always open.
Well, for the literally two, perhaps three listeners of A Bit of Culture.
Don't say that.
Hey, I'm being generous. We've gone up to three. The show will go on now to topic number two.
Right.
And Jason, DIY traveling.
Yes.
What are you talking about?
Well, essentially, when I was a medical student, that's when I discovered my love for traveling. I was studying in Dublin and had a group of very good friends who always wanted to go traveling because we were in Dublin and all the amazing countries were just an hour's flight away. So because we were medical students and because we were poor, we couldn't afford those like tour packages and, you know, all those like fancy tour agents who would say, hey, we're going to bring you to A, B, and C and you pay us this much. Even then, that was expensive. So what we did was DIY. We just went on the internet, searched for the cheapest hostels, the cheapest dorms. We went on the cheap... We searched for like quarter price tickets to shows and stuff. And so this whole experience is very DIY. We did everything ourselves. None of it was like what's advertised on the website. We always try to find the cheaper option, go on forums, read blogs, and find out what is the best way to get the most experience out of this, the cheapest. And that philosophy has trickled down till today. You know, that was 15 years ago. But whenever I travel, even though now I have my own savings, my own money, I never once signed up for any of those like 5-day cruise or 6-day Baltic tour. No, I always think there is a cheaper way and a more fulfilling way. I can like, oh, I hire a speedboat to go to this island, build a hut there, and then get another boat to another location. So it's all...
None of that is true, though.
Yeah, not the boat thing, yeah. But the rest of the stuff, in the age of the internet, everything is so easily accessible. Yeah, and it's more fulfilling because, like I was talking to you guys before, when you sign up for these tours, everything sounds nice and dandy and cheap, but actually, what they will factor in is all those unwanted visits and stops at gift shops where they will rip you apart and the Chinese would say, they will chop your vegetable head.
Okay. Or horrible restaurants where the food is for tourists and tastes nothing like what local people eat.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So when you go there, and like I was in Delhi, I went to Agra to visit Taj Mahal, I signed up for this tour. The tour guide was great, but he had to, in his own words, had to take me to two unwanted gift shops where the guy tried to sell me a marble table for 20,000 ringgit. And then when I said, no, I don't need a marble table, he then spent the next half an hour convincing me to buy all sorts of trinkets and junk, down to, and his last attempt was two small marble elephants for like 50 ringgit each.
You bought something though, didn't
no,
you?
No, I did not.
Oh, you broke.
No. If I bought it, it's like I would have betrayed my own philosophy.
Yeah. Shabana, are you
I am not at all a fan of package tours. And you know, for the longest time I used to be quite that's not to say I've not tried them.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
And also I do think they have some convenience. So I tend to decide to do the tour thing if I'm, for example, traveling with my mom. Because she sometimes can be a little bit wary of new places and she won't, you know, do what I do, right, which is just get on a public bus and see where it takes me.
Right.
So it's easier. For instance, we went to Myanmar. We did half of it on our own, and then certain portions we did a tour.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, but when we do those, I don't tend to do the 5-day, 4-nights type thing.
Just 2 days, 1 night, whatever.
No. What I meant was we tend to just, like, there are also these
day trip tours.
Tours where you can sort of put together what you want, and basically all you're doing is hiring a driver. Yeah, so I tend to do those, as little of what they decide for me as possible.
Okay.
But I get what you mean in that I've done a couple of those completely arranged tours and they can just feel so...
You have done them.
I have. And the one that comes to mind is I think it was in Thailand and we did a tour that included the floating markets as well.
Okay.
And the reason we did it was because it worked out cheaper to take the tour than to go on our own.
Right.
But then along the way, they took us to this snake show. And my friend and I, who I went with, we were horrified because these are not shows we wanted to see. And then it's the one where he's grabbing the cobra and milking it in front of us. And I'm like, no, like I would not have signed up for this.
Yes.
Yeah.
And this kind of tours, right, they tend to rush you.
Yes.
At the spots you want to spend in your whole life there. You know what I mean? Like let's say you go to like a particular temple or and if it's rush hour, they say, okay, come here, take the photos here, spend half an hour here, and then we got to go.
Yeah.
I think the moral of the story is that life is nothing like the movies. you know, whatever your expectations were, it's just not going to end up like that.
And, well,
but serendipity can happen.
Yes.
So, Shamila, you mentioned the the water, what's it called?
The floating market. Yeah.
I did that recently. Mm-hmm. And the floating market, we went on the tour, and the floating market itself was kind of rubbish. But along the way, I didn't even know this was happening. We were stopping at this railway market, which is this famous scene. I think you must have seen it. Where they remove the market so the train can go past. Okay. And when I watched it on the clips, I thought, ah, it's so fake. But when I was actually there, I look at the products that are on sale. I mean, these are real products. Okay. This is like chopped pieces of chicken and stuff like that. Tourists are not going to buy chicken, you know, for it to be cooking in the kettle in the hotel.
Okay.
And I realized that I was actually given an opportunity, last chance to see, because I don't think it's going to be there in 10 years' time. The tourism industry will have swept it aside. Mm-hmm. And I was really thankful to have seen it. And I wasn't expecting it. I hated the rest of the tour. I didn't want to be rubbing shoulders with other people. But I'm glad I went because of just that moment.
Do you not like travel at all, Cam?
Yeah.
You may have found something. I don't mind.
But wouldn't you have seen that railway market if you had DIY'd your way to what to visit the floating market?
I wouldn't. Because as Shyamala just pointed out, I would have been much happier just sitting in my hotel room doing absolutely nothing.
Also, you're the kind of people, you're the kind of people, Cam, who would spend money to get out of Malaysia to go to an exotic location
and read in your hotel room.
Read the hotel room. Is that I'm getting the glimpse?
No. Quickly for my three listeners, bit of culture. We like to travel and we like to experience the world, so we can bring it back to you.
What a lie.
So, can we cut that bit out, producer Daryl? So anyway, yeah, I've never been on one of those big sit on a coach four days, three nights,
right?
Europe in 5 days kind of thing. I've never done
that. Really, you know, that 5 days, Europe in 6 days. I'm like, how? I took 6 days in Berlin. Like, well, how do you do 6 days in Europe?
It is possible because my friends and I, we have one friend who is a manic when it comes to planning our trips. So she will bunch up all the sites in like 1 day. So she's the kind of person who can do Rome in 3 days.
Wow.
3 days. And you can see everything you want to see and take all the photos you want, but you probably don't have time to be in like the cathedral or the museum and really explore everything. So it's down to everybody's pace. Mm-hmm. Because most tourists, they want to see just the most famous sites.
Sure. And they don't want to kind of hang around and have a coffee for 3 hours like I do.
Yeah, so you want to absorb the city. Yes. You want to get lost in the city, right?
Yeah. Okay, so quickly though, are you DIY traveling anywhere soon, Jason?
Well, I'm planning to go to Japan next year and hopefully climb up Mount Fuji.
Oh,
wow. Yeah,
so that's my next, but that's like 6 months away.
People climb it? I didn't know.
Yeah.
Oh. And Shyamala, are you?
Not anything planned, but I did both Hanoi and Taipei this year with no plan, just DIY all the way, which was very fun.
Hanoi's really a revelation, isn't it?
Hanoi is amazing, and I really would not have done Hanoi as a tour. I think the fact that we just wandered around and found all these little things ourselves was the best thing about it.
It was you and your...
Me and a couple of my girlfriends.
Nice. Yeah. And Taipei was...
Taipei was me and another girlfriend of mine as well.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. See, I really enjoyed Hanoi. I wouldn't have gone if it hadn't been for my wife saying, hey, let's get out of the house for once, please, I beg you.
you need to bring more stuff back to for a bit of culture.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I was really glad when I got there, and I haven't traveled anywhere since.
Yeah.
So
can I just quickly share a must do for all avid travelers? You have to visit Tromsø in Northern Norway, and catch the Northern Lights. That is life-changing, life-altering.
Expensive as well.
Well, it's really, when you see it, it's worth every penny.
And DIY it, not take a tour, Northern Lights tour?
For that, we did book a tour, but that tour is just to see the Northern Lights.
I see.
Because otherwise, we wouldn't have known the perfect spots.
Whatever.
Yeah. It's worth it, man.
Just chuck. Anyway, so
hotel.
If listeners, you do go there, then also go down to Bergen and visit, older listeners might remember, Shiva Situ, host of this show, who has her ice cream cafe in Bergen. So go check her out there.
All right, ice cream.
And we move on, though. And in a moment, we're going to be talking about same role, different actor, here on A Bit of Culture, BFM 89.9. And we're back with myself, Cam Ruslan, Shyamala Ganesan, and Dr. Jason Leong.
Sup.
And so, topic number three, different actors, same role.
Yes, which sort of came to me because I recently watched the second Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them movie. Loved the first one, not a huge fan of the second. But they basically introduced Jude Law playing the younger Albus Dumbledore. Dumbledore is one of my favorite characters from the Harry Potter universe. And he's actually been played by two actors before this. So he was played by Richard Harris in the first two movies, and then Richard Harris passed away. And then he was played by Michael Gambon. So I found this really interesting because we've now got three versions of how to think of Albus Dumbledore. And to me, none of them are the same. The three actors play them really differently. And this is quite different from, say, like a Batman or a Spider-Man, because essentially they're rebooting the stories, right? So you're kind of given a chance to just reimagine the whole story.
Right.
But in this case, the story is actually chronological. So within the same story, within the same universe, you kind of have to wrap your head around the same person, the same character being played by such different actors in such different ways.
Right.
And I don't know if I quite like it.
Really?
For me, it's a bit of a disconnect. I never liked Michael Gambon as much as I liked Richard Harris.
And
to begin
that's
with.
How I know you are a real Potter fan.
Thank you.
Really?
Yeah,
really?
Because Michael Gambon butchered the role.
Yeah. Really? I mean, if you've read the books, Richard Harris's Dumbledore is really the most, the closer. He's like an old, cool hippie.
He's the definitive Dumbledore. That's what Dumbledore is.
So have you watched Jude Law yet?
No, actually, unfortunately, I haven't,
And so he's a completely different one. He's like in these sharp suits, and of course he plays a younger version.
Yes.
But there's this meme that really encapsulates how I feel about it, right? Like someone has his picture and then they have the picture of, I think it was Michael Gambon, and they go, how did he go from this to this in 50 years?
Yeah.
And that's actually, it doesn't make sense. Like if you think about it, this is not a natural sort of progression for a person to change or age.
You've read the book, both of you have read the books, I
yes.
assume. And did you, when you were reading about Dumbledore, did you ever think about what a young Dumbledore would be?
No.
Did you ever have an image in your head?
That's
fair.
It's not something that you think too much about, I think.
Yeah, because the books do not allude to Dumbledore being, I mean, they do not reference his younger self that much.
Yeah.
All you hear is, oh, he had a friend named Grindelwald and blah, 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 and then Grindelwald became bad. So you don't really think about, oh, what did he wear? How was it like? You know? But come back to, like, Shamila's example. Like, Michael Gambon was, he may look the part, but he didn't play it, or maybe he wasn't directed well enough to play Dumbledore, because Dumbledore in the books, like, there's one particular meme also in the books, there's a line in the book that goes something like, Dumbledore asked Harry calmly,
yes,
did you put your name in the Goblet of Fire? Right? That was a very tense moment, because that potentially could put Harry Potter in a lot of danger. So Dumbledore was like, in a calm manner, did you do this to yourself or did someone do it for you? In the movie, Michael Gambon rushes from one end of the room to the other end of the room, across the frame, grabs Harry, accosts him and goes, did you put your name in a goblet? And I was totally taken off from the movie. Like,
completely out of character.
Both of you.
Yeah, yeah. This is a huge thing for people who've read the book. It's the definitive scene where they're like, you're not Dumbledore.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. That's the definitive, you are not.
I love it when Harry Potter people just go for it, because it's like, and they're so invested. It's really lovely.
But it's like when watching David Bowie Friends.
I don't know where you go. I don't know where you're going with this. But be very careful.
Yeah, you're saying
no, but I was going to say that actually, I'm kind of nervous with this because you know the Netflix show The Queen.
Yes.
So I loved the first two seasons of The Queen.
That's the young queen.
The young queen. And Claire Foy plays the queen.
Oh, you mean The Crown?
Sorry, what am I saying? The Crown.
Oh, right.
Yes.
Yes, The Crown.
Yes, The Crown.
Yes, Claire Foy.
So Claire Foy plays the queen.
Right.
And Matt Smith plays Philip.
Yes.
But, you know, from the third season on, they're actually going to completely change the character, the cast.
Oh.
So they don't want to age the actors up. Mm-hmm. They just want to cast older actors. So they've cast Olivia Colman to play the queen.
Really?
And Tobias Menzies to play Matt Smith.
I do not know him.
Yeah.
But Olivia Colman's very good.
Yeah, she is very good. But that's the thing, right? right? You've gotten used to a certain actor playing a certain role.
Yes, yes.
So now it's, I feel like it's almost going to be like watching a completely different show.
Right, right.
And I'm not sure how I feel about it.
So hang on, this thing you're talking about, this is not like James Bond then?
No, no, because I think those are self-contained stories, right? Like, so even like a Spider-Man, you may prefer Tobey Maguire to Andrew Garfield or, you know, but they reboot the stories and they're not linked.
But this is Claire Foy's Queen E now becoming older, but it's no longer played by an older Claire Foy.
Yes.
It's just someone else. Yeah. I give you an example, but this was a bit, it was more jarring for a fan. I love the Pochukang sitcoms.
Yes.
Right? And do you watch?
I used to watch them.
No. Yeah.
So the first few seasons, Pochukang's brother was played by someone else.
Oh, yes.
A tall dude.
Good. Yes, okay, that's right.
A tall dude. And then this was just a casting change. The actor had to leave the sitcom for whatever reason, I can't remember. And they cast Pierre Peng in. And Pierre Peng is a shorter guy, like a head shorter, whatever, Pierre Peng. And so he's still Pochukang. So the show doesn't call it out. It doesn't go like, hey, what, you're shorter now? It's the same character, two different actors. Totally different actors. And in the beginning, it's like, no, you're not what you make. You're not him. But after a while, when you know, as the season wears on you, and you go, okay.
You know, when you've been talking about this, I have been struggling to think of an example. But you mentioned that, and I just suddenly remembered. I was shooting this drama.
Right.
I was directing it, and it was a nightmare shoot, and it took months and months. So we cast this one guy, really sweet fella, to be this quite small role. And so we shot the stuff around him. He was then unavailable. We took a long break. He was unavailable to do the next bit. So we had to recast this guy. Very, very different looking guy. Mm-hmm. But then there was another problem. And then we had another break and we had to recast him again.
You're like a soap opera.
Yeah. Okay. And it just became such a joke in the end. He's like three different people in one drama.
Do you not know about continuity?
No. It was really, it's like, what do we do now? I don't know. We just go for it.
And it does. It is jarring. Like, Jason, you watch Game of Thrones.
Yes.
Weren't you completely like boggled when Dario Naharis suddenly went from being long blonde hair to like bearded dark haired man, and I'm like, who are you? And because there's so many characters, I actually thought it was just a random character at first because he looks nothing like him. He plays him nothing like him.
Yes. Yeah, that was quite jarring. And also like very different, like long blonde hair into short crop black hair, you know. And but that also comes to another discussion about how the Dario Naharis you see on TV
is different from
the book. So yeah, but that's another pop.
Listening to you two, it's like you live in a separate. You must look at people like me and just go, oh, muggles. Eh?
Well, we didn't want to say
very rude.
Well, we must move on. We must move on. But I'm going to look out for that now. From now on, the changing thing. And we move on though to final part of the show. Recommendations. Recommend something we think might be of interest. And so I go first. My recommendation is the Italian film director Bernardo Bertolucci died recently, and he directed some really good films, but some sort of. But there's one film in particular I really want to recommend. It's called The Conformist, and it's sort of widely regarded as being one of the most beautifully shot movies of all time. But it's kind of an ugly film, but beautifully shot. It's about the rise of fascism in Italy in the 1930s, and about a man who just conforms. He's like nothing, but he just sort of like conforms to the environment around him. And it's a fantastic film, and I think very appropriate for today, where we have very much a rise of fascism and fascism be coming back. And I thought that the psychology and the beauty of that film. You know, going back to old movies, I don't know if people actually do it. I'm going to recommend it. I don't know if anybody will watch it, but if you do get the chance, it's such a good film.
Okay.
So I think people would watch it. I think there's a huge, huge sort of need for people to remind viewers that there are movies like these that existed that we can look back to.
Yeah. And it's just funny, you know, I mean, when I was growing up, you know, Italian film directors, that was like the big thing. I haven't thought of an Italian film director. I haven't watched an Italian film for years.
No, because I think the sort of the wave of, you know, we then had the Iranian cinema wave, and then I think now we're very much in the sort of Asian, there's lots of interest in Southeast Asian film. I think these things come and go.
Yeah. So that's Bernardo Bertolucci's The Conformist. And Jason,
Okay, I have two recommendations. The first one is, well, this is a bit shameless. I'm producing one of my good friend's comedy shows, Rishi Budrani, one of Singapore's top comedians. He's coming down to KL 26th of January, just downstairs at the platform, Menara Kent TTDI. It's a very satirical show about Singapore politics and stuff. It's called Cannot Means Cannot. So you can get tickets at www.cannotmeanscannot.com. It's really funny.
And that, you mean that site wasn't already taken before you got...
No, that's the thing, yeah. He bought it. So yeah, www.cannotmeanscannot.com. It's a fantastic show. I put my money on it. And that's my second recommendation. I just got this book yesterday. It's for all Game of Thrones fans out there. It's called Fire and Blood. A History of the Targaryen Kings.
Ah.
It's a massive book, 600 pages, just history, a sejarah textbook.
Illustrated?
Once in a while, there's like a few drawings here and there. So it's just a big history textbook about one half of the... there's a 1,000-year history before the first episode of Game of Thrones. So this covers the first half. So it's major geek out nerd session.
Yeah, can we actually really call it a history textbook?
It's a history textbook.
Oh, yeah, you two clearly do. your eyes, Sharma, you lit up.
Like, how do I not know about this? Is it by George R.R. Martin?
Yes, it's by George R.R. Martin, but it's also helped a lot by his two editors who are actually longtime favorite. Insane epic fans of George R.R. Martin. So they kind of help chronicle the lineages and stuff.
Nice.
And he helps them, like, writes the backstories, and this happened. So it's amazing read. I spent 3 hours last night.
And what's it called again?
Fire and Blood.
Okay.
The History of the Targaryen Kings.
Can I just ask, are you two Lord of the Rings book fans?
I am ashamed to say not as much as the movies.
Jason?
Well, I only got exposed to it by the movies. And when I tried reading the books, it was too hard for me at the time. I have to try again.
The two of you are like... Oh,
What? Hipsters?
No.
What? What's the word?
No, I don't know, Dara. What are the producer, Dara? What's the opposite of hipster?
I feel attacked.
No. I mean, I don't know anything you're talking about. I feel like I'm in... I was going to say alternative universe. I'm in this universe.
Right.
I live in reality.
I think you should get Cam a copy of Fire and Blood.
I should start at the beginning, shouldn't I? I should go watch the show, shouldn't I?
This is the beginning.
Yeah, this is the beginning of...
The beginning of the beginning.
I'm confused. No.
So,
please,
start?
Yeah, no. All right. We move on. So, Sharmila, what is your recommendation?
Well, because I started off talking about Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, I've got a recommendation by a couple of a local author and a local artist, Zedek Sue and Sharon Chin.
Yes.
And they came out with this brilliant book recently called Creatures of Near Kingdoms. I actually did an interview with them on my show. You can look it up on Front Row on the BFM website. But it's just a wonderful a collection of imaginary creatures that exist in Malaysia and its surrounding regions. And, you know, it sounds like they could be real. You know, they're creatures that kind of live in the in-between spaces that you don't quite see. The things that, pass in the corner of your eye and you don't realize what they are.
Well, these are 100% fictional. 100% they're not based on myths and folklore.
Well, I think maybe Zedek would tell you that they could be real, but he's not sure. they are, some of them are inspired by folklore, but very much sort of taken to, very different end by the writer Zedek. And they're illustrated by Sharon Chin, who is a brilliant artist. Just a wonderful volume. Yeah. It's not, they're not stories. It's set out like a field's notes or field
like
guide.
Like a compendium.
Kinda. Yes, a compendium of creatures.
Is it expensive, this book?
No, very cheap.
Very affordable.
Very cheap.
Yeah.
They really wanted to work hard to make sure that it was what they called affordable. That's actually really cheap.
Yes. 20 ringgit, I believe. Yeah. And by Marplay Comics. Highly recommend it. Such a good read.
It is lovely.
Yeah. For those of you who are not in the studio, you can see three people's heads bobbing up and down when Sharmila's talking about the book. The producer, Cam, and Sharmila. So I feel I will get this book just based on the three bobbing heads. I must get the book.
It's really good. And it reminded me actually of Rudyard Kipling's Just So stories.
Yes. And of course it did also sort of remind me of J.K. Rowling's Fantastic Beasts, which was a compendium. But this one's also, I think what's clever about Creatures of Near Kingdoms is it's also very I don't want to say political, but when you read it, you kind of get a sense of the history and the flavor and the politics and the culture of Malaysia and this region in a way that it's very surprising. It's not at all hard sell.
Yeah.
But yeah, very clever.
Yeah.
What's the title again?
Creatures of Near Kingdoms.
Okay,
cool. I'm glad you recommended that because I've been wanting to, but I can't. Yeah. So that brings us neatly to the end of this week's show. Only remains me now to thank special honored guest, Dr. Jason Yeung.
Thank you. Always an honor to be here.
And you got any? Do you personally have any shows coming up that you want to tell us about?
Well, no, not yet. I'm taking a break. Preparing. Well, I would love to take a break, but I'm actually preparing the next tour, which will start next March.
Yeah. Okay. All new jokes.
Yeah, all new jokes.
Oh, really? All new?
Yeah.
Oh, about time. Good. I mean, I didn't mean that. No, what I meant was, anyway. So, and Shamila.
Daryl, you just cut it out. You cut it out, you edit it, make it to make it look like he's not rude.
And also, thank you to Shamila Ganesan.
You're welcome, Cam.
Thank you very much. And so, thank you very much, listener. And please join us next week, if you can, to another episode of A Bit of Culture here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.